My name is Kara Ginger, and I'm your host of the Biteable Podcast, Know Better, Live Best. Today's guest is Elizabeth Erickson Noe. Raised on her family's cattle ranch in Central California, Elizabeth's roots in agriculture run five generations deep. Her and her husband currently run their own commercial beef operation and enjoy raising their children in the canyons of southeastern Colorado. Elizabeth has worked for the Colorado Independent Cattle Growers Association as their media coordinator, researching and writing for the organizations on topics pertinent to independent cattle ranchers. Additionally, she served one term as the National Beef Chairperson for Women Involved in Farm Economics. Listen as we discuss cattle ranching, sustainability, and what she would like to see in the future of farming. Know Better, Live Best is dedicated to supporting food and health literacy in people of all ages. Our mission is to cut through the misinformation surrounding food, health, and nutrition, because we believe that when people know better, they can make the right choices and live their best lives. We are presented by Biteable Foods. They use blockchain and Internet of Things technology to build traceable, transparent food systems, because it shouldn't take an investigative journalist to find out where food comes from. Hello, I am here with Elizabeth Erickson Noe. Hi, Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Awesome. I'm so happy to have you on tonight. I mean, a cattle rancher. This is amazing. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself. Yeah, this is really exciting. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm a fifth generation cattle rancher. I was born and raised in California. My family has ranched there for over 125 years, the same country. We're in the foothills near LaGrange and Snelling, California, little towns outside of the San Joaquin Valley. And then we ranch up there by Yosemite National Park. So that's my history as far as where I was born and raised. And then my parents bought a ranch in Colorado when I was in high school. And so my senior year, I actually moved here, met and married my husband, who is from this area of Colorado, southeastern Colorado. And we did a brief stint in Texas for about 7 years. I went to school and got my degree in biology with an emphasis in neurology. And then we came back and we have two small children. Well, one's not so small. She's nine now, but she's in third grade. And I actually do homeschool her. I do distance learning through a program back east, but I am the facilitator and have to teach a few subjects. And then my son is four. So we're kind of busy with little ones and just life on the ranch.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that you homeschool her. That's absolutely fabulous. I know a lot of listeners know I'm a kindergarten teacher, so education is extremely important to me. So it's going to be fun to talk to you tonight. I have those little ones at home too, so it's busy. And I also love, so I grew up in California, in Colorado. Those are my absolute two favorite spots to visit. We would alternate California and Colorado every other year. My dad grew up in California, so it's just a fun place to visit. And then we do Colorado just, you know, to save a little money for that next year's vacation and then go back to California. Yes. So like, you're living my dream here. And he's out of coffee. Excuse me. So this, I think, is a pretty neat profession, and it's not something you just walk into, being a cattle rancher. And obviously, you grew up with this. So how else did maybe that passion develop other than just, I mean, growing up with, basically growing up on a ranch?
Yes, yes. I'm very, very grateful for my my upbringing, for my lifestyle, for my parents, you know, for my great-grandparents. It's but I think it's like a lot of things. Some people, you know, there's a family history of educators. There's a family history of bankers. So it's, we're not different in that sense, but, the lifestyle, for one thing, I love the outdoors. I don't know if you just get that from growing up, being outdoors a lot. I love animals. So, you know, for me, when you can ride your, horse on a beautiful day and gather cattle and, you know, see some sandhill cranes fly overhead or some deer or elk. It's just, it's hard work, but it's satisfying work. And it is, I don't know, it's what I love. It's what I do.
Absolutely. And I can only imagine the work ethic that was instilled in you. I would think at a young age.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
My husband grew up on a farm and he's a hard worker. I'm, like I said, I'm always just, I mean, I'm obviously very thankful, but hard worker. So have you noticed that, I guess, helping just in other aspects of your life, or do you see things that you grew up doing that you instill in your own children, maybe?
Oh, yes. Well, one of the things that we instill, I mean, I remember my dad saying it, and he says it even when the kids are one and two and they're doing little tiny things, you know, he says, oh, good job. It's good to work, isn't it? And so you instill that it's good to do a job and it's good to work hard, even if it's something really minor for a child. But yes, I think, and then the other thing is we don't quit. My cousin, his wife from California, she's a hairdresser and she loves to go, but she says, oh my gosh, you guys will, you know, go into the brush and chase a cow and get all scratched up, you know, to make sure you don't lose her. She goes, and I would be thinking, well, maybe tomorrow I'll get it. But we know if we quit now, that's, you know, it doesn't make sense for your time, or you up in the mountains, you could totally lose the cow. So yes, it's, we don't quit, and then we work very hard, and weather is just, it's part of the job. So if it's cold, you just learn to dress warmly and deal with it. And if it's hot, you just deal with it, and you're just thankful for what you do. So attitude is really important. I think that's another thing, having a good attitude. And that's just for anyone in life. But my dad really instilled that in us, you know, the thoughts you think, you know, they have power. So mm-hmm. having a good attitude and then working hard is definitely something, and don't quit.
Your father's extremely wise, because the big push nowadays, especially in education, is that growth mindset. What you're talking about, he was doing that, you know, forever ago. It was just something he knew was important. That's something you wanted to do. So yes. I'm also kind of curious too. So you, grew up, I mean, learning a lot about food, probably without even realizing it. Maybe you did. It was your way of life. Mm-hmm. And then you probably had friends that maybe grew up a different way. Did you ever think differently about food, or was it something that you even noticed about yourself? Maybe then like your friends or other family?
When I was younger, probably sometimes when I would go to people's houses, I go, why does their meat taste different? You know, it wasn't seasoning. It was just whatever was added into it, you know, that we don't add into it, you know, in the retail chain. So that a little bit. And then I always appreciated where it came from. You know, mm-hmm. I knew it was much better to get it from the strawberries, from the strawberry field, you know, farmers, than somebody else. So I think I always had an appreciation for it. But, you know, where I grew up, it was rural. So a lot of the kids, you know, were familiar with that. But in California, you have a lot of people that aren't. So I see more of a disconnect now than when I was younger.
I could see that. This is kind of a new push for me, or new interest, is just really looking into the food and how I interact with food, if that even sounds right. But I'm learning so much more that I wish I would have known a long time ago. And it's just information. I think people want to know. It's just information and how you come about it. Right. So let's get to, you know, even more fun stuff. What is a typical day in your life like?
Well, there's not a typical day, because we have seasons in which we do different work here.
Oh, yeah.
So right now we're coming out of our fall season. So a typical fall day, one day I might be sitting at home, you know, in the morning with my daughter from about 7:30 to noon doing school, and my son doing preschool. And then in the afternoon, getting on my horse and driving some cattle up what we call the lane into a chute, so my husband can check them to see if they're pregnant. And that could be a normal day. Then quite a few days, I have my mother-in-law who substitutes for me, and I'm on my horse all day helping gather the cattle, and then we sort the calves off, because this is the time of year where we wean the calves and we sell them. So I could be on a horse all day. I could be, you know, doing, and then I come home, and when I'm on a horse all day, I come home, and then I'm grading and going over school with Maisie, and then doing chores around the house. But it varies. Every season varies, whether it's calving season or weaning season or summertime or winter. But that was kind of my typical day for the last 6 to 8 weeks.
Interesting. So do you take your children with you in the afternoon, or do they do something different?
Oh, yes. Oh, no. No, they, the four-year-old likes to think he's helping. He kind of walks around when we're at the, you know, right here by the house at the chute with the squeeze where the cows go in, and my husband checks them. And my daughter, though, she helps. She helps bring them up. So she's learning, and she'll be on her horse sometimes. She learns how to, what we call, read a cow. Know, you know, where you ride your horse towards or step towards to make them go this way or stop or whatever. So she's just this year started doing some of that herself. But we have had other times where my mother-in-law couldn't help, or my mom wasn't here and she couldn't help with school. So my daughter has had to drive the little ranger out to the pasture with my son, and they putz along while we're riding our horses out, and she has her school and her computer, and she kind of goes to a central point, and I say, you stay right here, and they have their little snacks, and he plays, and we gather, and we come, you know, back to that point, but because, you know, sometimes I'm a mean mom, it's like, you can't get off school. So we right. do year round. So she gets like a week off, but she had a broken arm at this time. So she had to drive out. She couldn't ride her horse. So well, anyway, that changes.
And it's not just, obviously there's certain work you have to get done with her, but she's constantly learning everything you're doing with her. Like you might leave the house, you know, at noon, but that learning continues and it's hands-on. Like you said, the work ethic, that is just absolutely amazing. You get so used to your own life and then you talk to wonderful people like you and you're like, how neat, you know, everything that's going on out there. And you're just a pretty, pretty impressive person anyway, just reading up on you. You're involved in a lot of organizations. I think it's very neat. And I know you're very humble and you're not going to see that. But, you know, from the outside looking in, it's pretty amazing. You know, just what's important to you and what you're instilling people and the organizations that you're in related to farming. And just for the listeners out there, do you want to tell us a little about your roles and responsibilities that you do have and maybe different organizations you're involved in?
Sure. I'm not in this capacity anymore, but I was the media coordinator for the Colorado Independent Cattle Growers Association. And really what my role there was research and writing. So I would research topics that were really important or things that were going on related to independent cattle producers and then write for the organization and submit those articles, you know, to different media outlets. So that was a role I had. I enjoyed very much. It was a lot of work, but that was a good opportunity really to bring to light some issues that weren't being talked about maybe in the mainstream because the packers kind of control more of the media sometimes and what goes on. So that was a good opportunity, and I'm done with that role now. And then I'm actually finishing out my term as the National Beef Chairperson for Women Involved in Farm Economics. And that's an organization that advocates for ag. They do a yearly fly into Washington, D.C., where we meet with legislators and we go to meetings to promote topics that are really important to independent farmers and ranchers.
Wow, that's amazing. And just the push and getting your voice out there. Like you said, a lot of information, you have to weed through it. You can't just obviously believe everything you hear, but you need to understand and take that interest to go find out more information. And then you're out there giving that voice. That's important, and not just believing maybe the media, because it we know what happens. And as I mean, just a consumer myself, or people buying things that are recalled and everything else, you do need to find out where that food's coming from. Why is that happening? And not just turn on the news and be like, "Yep, that's how it goes." But you're taking that stand and that voice.
Yeah, it's very important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how you're doing that with two little kids, because I have a few little ones myself. I don't know if you sleep, maybe.
Fortunately, I run. I don't need as much sleep as my husband or some other people. So that, I guess that's a blessing.
You're really well rested. So clearly you're getting some rest, but you maybe just know how to use your time better than me.
I don't know about that. Kindergarten teachers are pretty impressive. They're valuable assets to the world.
What of those things, you know, like, what I can handle is different than what other people can handle, but I couldn't do most of what you can do. It's just kind of funny how that works out.
We're different.
Yeah, back to, you know, the food and how you're getting your voice out there. And you talked on it briefly earlier, how just that disconnect from, I mean, food a little bit, how really you can just show up anywhere and buy something and then, you know, you're worried about the recalls. What are some things that you wish consumers right now, because like I said, you have another, you know, voice right now to get that out there. What do you wish they knew about beef production? Certainly something I don't know much about. Yeah. I mean, you could probably go on for hours.
Oh, I could. Yes, we could go forever. But well, my interest, obviously, based on my degree, is science. So I love science. And, you know, what science always is supposed to be is it's just facts. You know, it's research, and then it's evidence, and then, you know, you just have facts. But it's discouraging to see so much of science being used with an end result wanted, and so then the data is manipulated to give the result that they want. So for example, and this has happened for a long time, especially kind of on the environmental side, the idea that cattle pollute the air and they pollute the soil and they pollute the water. And, you know, I know there are scientific studies that say they have all this data that shows that. But when you live, eat, and breathe, and you see what you do, and you look at other scientific studies that show, and they're just unbiased studies showing what happens to some soil, you know, after a cow walks across it with her cloven hooves, you know, and then manure, which is a fertilizer. People buy that. Yeah, you know, well, we just do it out here. Why does the grass come back, you know, each year? Why are the wildlife still here? Why are the skies clear? And then, so that ideology that cattle just are horrible for the environment is, that's a falsehood. I would really encourage people to look and go, well, where was this study from? You know, who did it? Was the intent, was this an environmental group with an intent that has a mission, you know, to remove cattle, say, from grazing, you know, on Forest Service allotments? You know, what was the intent behind it? Because often you can find out, if the intent is just to find truth, you know, hopefully the data is truthful. But if the intent has an agenda, as we know, it can go one way or the other. So, but for example, in California, most of the streams are very clear. There's heavier grass cover. It's more of like a lawn in ways. Where here in Colorado, in southeastern Colorado, we're high desert. So the grass grows, it's almost like a clumpy grass. So there's dirt in between these clumps. And so runoff is dirt. It's not running off of grass. So you could drive across a river or stream here and go, look at all that mud. It's cattle, you know, and it's no, you could be anywhere where there's no cows, you know, where there aren't cows. And it's a muddier stream, even if it's moving, because of the soil and the natural erosion that occurs. So that, I think, just that mindset that they're bad, it's that would be one thing that I wish I could encourage people to go, well, just look at it for a second. You know, go drive past a ranch and do you see, you know, pollution over the sky there? Do you see, you know, wildlife present there? Do you see grass and trees and flowers and things that should be growing in open spaces? And if you do, then that means somehow we are creating, we have a renewable source, you know, and cattle are simple. They're simple in a way that they need sunshine, rain, and grass and soil. So they recycle that, and year after year, you know, they produce a calf. And anyway, so it's a good thing. The other thing I would like to point out, we don't have a feedlot operation, but I know people who do. And there is a misconception about feedlots that they are, you know, horrible. They're horrible conditions for the cattle. And one thing I would like to say is there are bad actors in every industry. There are bad actors in the financial industry, in the education industry, in the ranching and farming industry, in law enforcement even. There are bad actors everywhere. Mm-hmm. So one bad actor doesn't, you know, mean that that's how everyone is. So there are people who don't care for their cattle, but there are people with feedlots that do a very good job of caring for their cattle. And if you've been raised around them like I have my whole life, I've asked four veterinarians. I said, okay, could you just tell me if I'm right here? You know, people really want to make cattle and all animals just like humans, with the same intelligence level, the same emotional capacity as human beings. So we humanize everything. I mean, we can humanize a plant.
Plant, yep.
But that's not reality, you know? That's our compassion and maybe our desire, but what's reality? You know, what's the emotional intelligence of a dog versus a cow or a horse? And so cattle, they're a little bit simpler. They're not as emotional, say, as a dog or a cat. And that's not just because those are domesticated pets.
Right.
They have a different intelligence level. You can teach cows to do certain things, but you can't teach them to do everything that you can a dog or a cat, not because of their athletic ability, just truly the intelligence, you know, on the scale of intelligence. So anyways, with cattle, they really tend to be content, sick, or crazy. There's not many that are crazy, but it's kind of a genetic thing. You know,
really?
How you can have, yes. And believe me, so if people, you know, think, oh, well, if you just go this way, every animal will respond this way. Well, if you have a cow that has a little bit of a crazy genetic disposition, or maybe she's just a very fearful cow by nature, she might try to run you over and pin you to a wall. I mean, she could care less, you know, you're dangerous. She's going to take you out.
Right.
Knock you over that fence. So that would be how I define a crazy cow. A sick cow, you can identify them by, you know, their ears, their head position, and they're not feeling good. And you, so you can drive by a feedlot and you will see cows chewing their cud. You know, you'll see some that maybe could look sick because, like in a daycare, they're in a confined place. You know, disease would spread a little more easily than, you know, my kids out here by themselves, say the two of them, you know, most of the day versus being in a group of, you know, 30. But you do have those common factors, you know, when you do confine something, but the idea that that is completely harmful to the animal is wrong. I mean, most of those cattle are pretty content. It's a different awareness and understanding animals and different animals, you know? And so that would be one thing I think I would like readers to just, or listeners to kind of think about, you know, and take a step back and not always look at every single animal as being like their brother or sister, like a human being, because they are different and they are content in many different ways than we are.
Right. Well, you bring up really good points because, and I'm actually glad you brought those up because this is something that is newer to me and I've heard all of those things. And I think the listeners out there need to know that if you are easily swayed by the media, you hear something and you automatically believe it, and then you listen to this podcast and you're like, oh, that's interesting. You don't have the information. Go do your research, like you're saying. Find out more about it. Don't just believe the first thing you hear. And I think you'd want them to say, yeah, if you are not sure about what I'm saying, I encourage you to look into it and check it out. And that's important. You're not going to say, just take my word for it because I said so. I mean, obviously, this is your passion. You have way more information than anyone I have talked to yet, you know, for the most part about this. I had another great podcast as well, but get the information. That's what I'm trying to do with this podcast is bring up these points because information is so important. And like what you brought up about, you know, how it's affecting the planet. I am so glad you brought that up because it's things you hear and I don't have the answers to those. So talking to you about this makes me think more. And I'm not saying I did not believe that. I'm saying I've heard these things, just like you said. And there are some ranchers that aren't taking care of their cattle, but there are some teachers. Now I can't personally say I know any, but I know there are teachers out there that aren't, you know, doing their best job. Everyone I've known and worked with is amazing. Just like I'm sure you know amazing cattle ranchers, but they're out there. It's just the way it goes. We're human.
So, and I would venture to say there are more parents that treat their kids poorly than there are ranchers who harm their kids. Cause even the toughest of ranchers, you will see them out in a blizzard trying to save the life of one calf. And you know, they may have not even been great parents. So it's sad, but anyways, there is that reality. But one thing about the industry, I mean, there are people that are not good actors in the industry, but most of the people, the independent producers like us, the family farms and ranches, they care, because if we don't take care of the environment, our cattle won't survive. If we don't take care of our cattle, we won't survive, you know? So it's kind of like you're always working together. And you feel really good about what you do. So I would encourage people to not look at it with disdain and an uneducated viewpoint, to really maybe even go and meet a rancher or farmer and just say, hey, could I learn more about what you do? You know, that might be the best way, because you can read all you want and you never know. Well, are these facts skewed? I don't know, you know?
Absolutely. So do you have people coming to ask you? I mean, you bring up a good point about that, like actually go. And I've had a lot of guests, whether it's farming or cattle ranches, they're saying, come out. I have nothing to hide. I would love to educate you. Did you have people asking you to come out?
Yeah, we do. We have some friends who, they grew up in a city, and so now they live in the rural town, the closest town from us, and they live in that town, and they're like, you do what? Could we come? And my daughter has chickens. She has a little egg business, Cozy Coop Eggs, and she has goats. And so, you know, it's just to be able to see that and see what we do. And then we have friends, you know, that I've never even seen how cattle are what we call work. You know, when you're working your cattle, you bring them in the corrals and you do things like preg checking, or, you know, if they need vaccinations, yearly vaccinations, those things that you're doing, you know, they've never seen it done. So yes, we do have people. And some people honestly are a little afraid to ask, because they think, oh, it's like, can I just come see what the inside of your house looks like? And you know, it's, no, come and see, you know, come, do you want to ride a horse? You can ride a horse. And so it's pretty fun.
Get down and dirty. Come see what we do.
Yes. Eat some minerals.
Absolutely. Well, and I think it takes that appreciation for, wow. So maybe the next time they have that meat on their plate, they're like, they think a little bit more about everything that just happened instead of sitting down quickly because,
yes.
Well, you know, that's what happens a lot.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend that's a horse trainer. She trains jumping horses, and she asked if she travels globally quite a bit for competition and things like that. But she asked to come to a branding one time where that's the time where we brand the calves, you know, the identification. State of Colorado, we have a brand law. So that is it's like a clothing label, you know, but it's a permanent brand. And she wanted to come see that and bring her 8-year-old daughter, who's a friend of my daughter, said, absolutely. And after that day and seeing how the community works together and does all that they do, she said, oh my goodness, anyone who eats beef needs to do this, you know, to see the work and the effort and to see how it's all done and appreciate it. She's very hands-on though, so she loved it.
Well, and she's right. And I like that she's bringing her kids. Well, I know I keep going back to that. I just love when kids are getting out there and experiences, but it's so true. I had a podcast one time, just basically about coffee. And it's just that newfound appreciation when you drink. I mean, if you're a coffee drinker in the morning, you just think about all of those people out there and what goes into that cup of coffee that you think you need, you know.
The three cups, the
glass that never ends. But I love it. It's that appreciation of everyone's work. And I think you look at people in different ways too. Mm-hmm. And that's
just, you do. Yeah. Oh, no, so I think you you appreciate, you know, you appreciate that people are created with different talents and skills, and you appreciate that skill or talent. You know, I mean, I appreciate amazing kindergarten teachers. Mine was my favorite. So you do, you look at someone and you admire and you learn, you know, but you also just, you gain respect for people. Right. And sometimes if you have misconceptions, those are, you know, corrected. So.
Oh, they're almost always answered.
Yes. Yeah.
They really are. So I'm going to switch gears just a little bit. I'm kind of excited to ask you this question because I know I do, and it's said a lot, sustainability. And I started hearing that word a lot more. This is almost embarrassing. It's probably only like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I mean, a lot, hearing it a lot. And I had to really look it up for sure what everyone meant by that. I mean, I know what sustainability means, but what it actually meant. So I want your take on it a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, like you, a year and a half ago is kind of right on the mark for when it popped out. So sustainability, you know, it means to, you know, be able to sustain something, to continue something. But the actual word in the terms of for agriculture production, that the actual word for agriculture production when that came out was environmental organizations, specifically the World Wildlife Fund. And their ideology is that, you know, there shouldn't be people on certain spaces of the earth, and there definitely shouldn't be cattle anywhere. So it's kind of funny that they are the ones who pop up with the word sustainability, and an organization that's known to not advocate for human rights or, you know, agriculture, you know, specifically. They're actually somebody who wars against, you know, farming production or livestock production. Now they're coming out saying, hey, we want to help the farmer and the rancher be more sustainable. And so it was like, oh, really? You know, hey, why don't we look at some other things like the estate tax that's not only for the rich? You know, let's look at that. Let's look at laws and regulations. Let's look at regulations that aren't being enforced and, you know, corporations that are merging and there's no government oversight. Let's look at those things if we really want to sustain us. Because, you know, when we look outside, I mean, the cattle are doing fine. The environment's doing fine. You know, we're doing okay. But anyways, so yes, I think they have truly raped and pillaged the word. I do not consider it something that is pertinent to my life. What I consider pertinent to my life is stewardship. And I think that's really a word that everyone should look at. You know, do you steward your family well? Do you steward your finances? Do you steward your, you know, the job that you have and the lives that are impacted by that? So when I look at sustainability, I think of the environmental groups that want to remove, you know, cattle. They want to remove people from places, I think, of the World Wildlife Fund, going into Africa, you know, and taking out indigenous people to make preserve, to take wealthy people on these tours, all under the guise of caring for the planet, you know. Mm-hmm. If you really care for the planet, you know, then do your part. Take care of it. Don't just send a check to somebody who says they're doing it.
Right.
You know? So, so sustainability is, it's not my favorite word because a rancher didn't come up with it as it pertains right. to agriculture. But now, like everyone, we kind of panic and go, oh, we've got to jump on that. We've got to do something about that. You know, and you have Walmart, you know, who is known for their quality products. And I'm not bashing Walmart because we have a Walmart and I go there and I appreciate
right.
it. I appreciate Walmart.com, but they're not necessarily known for high quality of things sometimes, you know? And now they're saying, well, we want this and we want that. And it's all about quality and care. And you're going, really? Is this the same, you know, company? Like I could understand that from other companies, like, you know, but I'm not so sure. So anyways, the word sustainable is a word that was coined by the World Wildlife Fund, Jason Clay, the environmentalist. Well, the purpose behind the environmental movement towards sustainability and some of their partners is to try to create a more consolidated food system. And Jason Clay of the World Wildlife Fund gave an example. I wish I had something like that, but like a goblet, you know, which you pour wine or water in. And he did the 7 billion consumers as the top. And then the stem are companies that control roughly 83% of food distribution throughout the world. And then at the base of the glass was the producers, the livestock producers, and then it's sitting on the earth. And so he said, well, since we couldn't get people to change their buying practices through the organic movement, which I'm all for organic, but you know, he was pointing to changing the purchasing and the eating habits of 7 billion consumers. What if we put the pressure on the companies that control food production? Because then we're going to force consumers to eat what we want them to eat, and we'll force producers to do what we want them to do. So that's kind of the ideology, is allowing the consolidation further of food. So then people who want control can control what's produced, how it's produced, and what you get to eat and what you have access to. You know, I live in a rural area. We don't have access. You should see the limited amount of organic food we have access to. Very
really?
Limited because A, demand, B, cost, you know, and then C, the store doesn't really have to care because they don't have competition. So they can just offer what they want to offer and you have to buy what they have. So, you know, that I'm for food that is good, that is whole, mm-hmm. that is healthy, and that everyone can afford, not just, you know, the wealthy or those who can afford to, you know, buy the best food products. That's what I'm for. And I know most producers do a good job. Now, there are things that have come into our industry that are harmful, and there are people mm-hmm. that are all about profit because of the three packers, the main three. There's 4, but there's primarily 3 that control the beef industry. They control the pricing to some extent, and they also control what they want to buy. So if they want cattle weighing a certain weight, steers weighing a certain weight in order to slaughter and process them, those feedlots that are in contract with them will do whatever on the vaccines or the daily feeds of antibiotics to satisfy what the packer wants. And you know, is that good and healthy? No, it's just, that's about money. But there are other people who are doing everything, you know, right and the best they can, you know, that are trying to use quality feed for their yes. cattle, only doctoring to save its life, you know, not to, you know, give it just antibiotics just in case.
Right.
You know, so there are, the majority are doing it right, but there is that. So yeah, when it comes to sustainability, circle back to that, it really is more on, can we make a living at what we do and pass it on to the next generation? Because what we're seeing is the same acres of land being farmed or ranched, but the number of operators becoming fewer and fewer. So there, especially in the farming, that's really been consolidated. Most family farms get bought up by the neighboring corporation, the farming corporation. A lot of cattle ranchers, you know, the parents are on there, but the profitability now of selling a calf is about the same as what it's been, you know, for the last 20, 30 years. So while your cost of buying, say, a new pickup has gone up exponentially, mm-hmm. your income hasn't followed. So you're kind of going like, you know, this. And that is really hard then to bring in a younger member of the family and even be able to sustain the two families, the grandparents and the next generation working on that same farm. So often those kids have to go into different careers in order to make a living. And then, you know, when the parents are in their 70s or 80s, they come back and help, but they now have, you know, entered a different career that they would be silly, you know, to give up, or they make a big life change to come back and do that. So that is the thing. You don't see a lot of young people very easily getting into farming and ranching from a startup anymore.
Oh, no, probably not. And with the sustainability, and you, I had heard you actually speak on this a little bit. And you bring up good points of just the financial part too. I think sometimes we hear sustainability, it's a lot of times about like the environment, and it comes down to even that family farmer, that family, you know, rancher being able to provide for their family. It really does come down to that. We need to appreciate them, all the hard work they do, but they need to make a living.
Yes, we do. You know, we have to make a profit. Everyone has to be able to afford what they can, you know, afford the food that we provide too. You know, I mean, it's a cycle. You know, we all have to be able to make a living and be able to, you know, eat good food and, you know, be able to provide for our family. So it is, there's a lot of challenges. It's not just those that I mentioned, but there are, you know, challenges with that. The price fixing, they wouldn't call it that, but it is, it's controlled a little bit. So fortunately in the cattle industry though, they have not yet figured out a way to, chickenize it. You know how Tyson took what they call the Tyson model. The Meat Racket is an excellent book. If you've never read that, it's kind of sad. It's not excellent. It's kind of sad, but because there were a lot of families that came in and just in towns and communities that were just lost everything through this.
Really?
But what they did is they basically provided the feed, they provided the chicken, and all they did was hire out the labor. But what they did is then they controlled everything. Then they bought the eggs back, you know, at a fixed price. So everything was controlled, and they found out you could put a chicken in a tiny little box and it'd still lay an egg and you feed it food. Well, you can't do that with a cow, fortunately. They need grass. You cannot take a cow and a calf and shove them in, a tiny little stall. They won't thrive. So we are fortunate in our industry, that can't happen to our livestock and that can't happen to us. We can't be shoved out by, you know, I don't know if you saw in China, those pork, their hotels for, it's multiple stories high and it's a pork farm. I mean, they're just in these little tiny slots,
you know,
they're piglets. And anyway, so they can't do that with a cow and a calf. So, you know, they cannot chickenize our industry because they have to have grass, sunshine, and water. They cannot be confined from birth up. So we are fortunate in that. Unlike so many chicken, poultry, and pork, you know, producers, there's very few that are independent. Most of them are contracted directly to like Smithfield or Tyson, to the larger corporations, and they're in a sense serfs. You know, just working on their own land for someone else. But it's a sad situation. But anyways, I still think there is hope. There is always hope. There's always hope.
And I feel like you have to have that. And it's people like you and a lot of the people I'm meeting that are making that change. You know, they're giving that voice. You're not just sitting back and hopefully this gets fixed. hopefully the next generation works on this harder.
Yes.
It can be easy to do, but then there's go-getters out there that maybe just have that ability to give that voice. Not everyone has that ability. I'm not the best at speaking up always. I'll do what's right and I might find someone else that can do that for me, but you know, people like you that aren't afraid or that, you know, I can go out and do it. They have that information because that's how change happens.
That's right. And awareness, when the truth brought to light, you know, people become aware. And that's what's so valuable now is the consumers that are becoming aware, like what you guys are doing, helping consumers become aware. You know, Jillian Michaels' book, that was the first one I read, Mastering Your Metabolism. And she said, if it didn't walk on the earth, don't eat it. If it didn't grow from the earth, don't eat it. You know, and that was kind of my first awareness into the American diet that was so much processed. I'm like, oh, I don't want that. You know, my body can't process that. It wasn't designed to process that. So these same companies who have done that for years now are kind of jumping on the bandwagon of, oh yes, we want traceability. We want you to know where your food comes from. You know, but it's all for them. It's market, you know, where we are having to look at things and go, should we try to sell directly to consumers? It's going to take a whole different level. We'll have to change our operation. A lot of people don't realize that even regionally, some climates and some grass is better for growing cows and calves. And then when they're weaned, it's better somewhere else, that grass and that climate, for the weaned calves to grow out, you know, to get to their maturing weight. So some of it is your terrain. You know, if you can't, you know, fence it well, and younger calves, when they're weaned, they'll, you know, go out over rim rocks, where here cows will stay. The rim rock acts on the top of a mesa. It acts as a natural fence. So it's hard. You can't just switch and go, oh, well, here, I'll just sell my beef directly, because there are different people in the beef, you know, chain, basically.
You bring up good points, because I think, well, I know, and it depends on how you're looking at it and where you're getting the information. You know, sourcing of food is important. I mean, like you said, even just, or even just being aware of what maybe are the best types of food for you, like Jillian Michael said. But it's amazing how what your body feels like when you're not eating all of the processed foods. It really is amazing I feel. And then when I have a day where maybe I haven't done the best, I'm like, this is how I used to feel all the time. And now I feel horrible when that happens. But that was my life before. It's kind of funny how you went that long doing it. And now your body's like, no, you were treating me right. Come on. But you know, the sourcing of food is important. And I think it's might have different opinions for different people, but why is quality sourcing of food important to you?
I think once I realized, you know, like I said, we raise our own beef, so we eat our own. Mm-hmm. I think once I realized the quality of the beef in stores that was provided, I would go to a friend's house and she'd say, oh, make that spaghetti, you know, that you made. My boys don't like spaghetti, but would you make it? And I'm going, after we're eating, I'm like, something's wrong. I don't know what tastes wrong. I did everything the same. And she says, it's the beef, you know? And so when I started looking into that, well, what happens, you know, in some of these places, you know, what goes into that? It's just supposed to be beef. That's when I became more concerned and aware. Mm-hmm. And I realized my reputation's tied to what that company's doing, yep. You know, or what that middleman is doing. And so for me, though, it all started when I became a mother. Probably similar for a lot of women who are listeners on here going, wait a minute, you know, you want the best for your children. And yep. So that's when I started going, oh, no processed food, you know, and you just look at that and go, oh, okay, you know, this is important, because you look, I don't know if you've ever heard of Dr. Caroline Leaf. She has a great podcast, but it's on how we eat, on how we think, and how we live. And she's a neuroscientist, and so she had a clinical practice. But what studies have found is that 80% of disease is caused by food and diet and exercise, mm-hmm. you know, or lack of exercise. So, you know, I just began to become much more aware of what do we put in our bodies. And, you know, for me, I just don't think my neighbors in the rural towns that we live in, if they don't raise their own beef, they should only have access, you know, to beef that's offered in stores sometimes that isn't, I mean, even their choice or their prime is not the quality of ours, because so many things have been added to it. So it was becoming a mother that really, you know, made me really look at it. I was always kind of healthy before, but then also, and then on the other hand, going, this is my reputation. You know, right. People think I do these things to, you know, our calves, or, you know, they think we harm our cattle, and everyone puts us in, you know, puts implants in, you know, mm-hmm. growth hormones in at birth. I'm like, they've never done that. Right. You know? So that's also where I'm trying to encourage my husband and my parents who ranch as well, and siblings, to let's try to see if we can figure out how to sell, you know, directly. Because we can do it, honestly. For about the same price, maybe a little bit more of the average price of the beef, still make a living, but they're getting exactly what they thought they were getting in the first place, you know? Mm-hmm. So we've learned that, you know, how everyone's making, you know, a profit on this, but then what's happening, or they're mixing it with foreign beef, you know, that wasn't raised under the same standards, or, you know, didn't have the same inspection requirements that ours do. So anyways, yeah, it was becoming a mother though, really.
Oh, becoming a mother has changed my life in obviously more ways than that. But it's very true. I look at the food that obviously sometimes my children eat, and it's just, I do cringe. It's hard. And we're still working on obviously moving in a better direction. But like you said, I am more than happy to pay a little more money if I know what's happening with that food, because I think everyone is nervous these days with the recalls happening. I mean, there's like these funny memes of, yeah, just, you know, eat. Basically, it's better to eat like the Halloween candy than eat a salad, because
yes, and that's horrible. It shouldn't be that way.
It isn't. It's supposed to be funny, but then you're kind of like, well, I don't know, maybe. It's nerve-wracking because you're feeding that to your family and everything else. I would gladly pay a little extra money to know where that food comes from. And you are right. We have this misconception. And I say weeks. At some point, I don't have this misconception anymore. But I did for a while. I'm like, what are they doing to these animals? They're injecting them. And now what are we eating? You know? And and that's not the truth. At some point, something happens. But where is that point? It'd be nice to know. And some consumers may not truly care, but I think most do. They just either don't know there's a problem, and if they found out, they'd want some more change. Or like me, now I'm more aware, and it happens. But I think we all care about what goes into our bodies, and that, you know,
I think so.
Disease and everything else, and being around for your kids. But like I said, so yes, I agree with you with the sourcing of the food, and it's nice hearing it come from you, more knowledgeable.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's important because, you know, for a rancher, you know, it would be inhumane to let a calf suffer and die if they're really sick. I mean, to me, I consider that completely inhumane, but, so we will administer antibiotics if that calf is sick, you know, but we don't, it's not even profitable for us because those antibiotics, one bottle is, you know, $120 sometimes. So, I mean, you're going to use it on the calf whose life, you know, could go downhill very quickly. You know, you're not going to just go around and you're not going to expend the labor or the time to gather all your cattle to, you know, give them antibiotics, you know, on a regular basis, because ours are in pastures, you know, I mean, they graze all day long. So it doesn't make sense, but it is inhumane not to do that. And then there's regulations, you know, the withdrawal periods. So the antibiotics we ingest into our bodies, if we need it, you know, or we decide to take it because we're so sick, you know, that is much more high potency than what you're going to get from a calf that it's met the withdrawal period and now, you know, is okay to be slaughtered, you know, under government regulations. So, I mean, that part is, rest assured, it's really not that bad, but rest assured too, that most cow-calf producers are not giving antibiotics to all their livestock from birth, you know, on. I mean, that's, we would be broke.
Well, and it's funny to hear you talk about it in that way. Like, of course, antibiotics cost money. You don't think about it, but of course they do. So why would, that's a good point. But I think a lot of consumers out there, you hear the news and right away. And then you talk to someone like you and you're just like, oh my goodness, seriously, when is this happening? And so that's a good whole point of this podcast. We're out there seeking information. That's the point, and it's great. But yes, oh my goodness, I have to laugh sometimes when I'm having these conversations but I love it, gaining the information. So what is your vision for the future of farming? And maybe it's just what you're doing and you want everyone to do that. I don't know.
Well, I think in the U.S., there could be bleakness because of the consolidation of food companies. So that, I think, I mean, consumers either need to join consumer groups or help support, you know, farming and ranching groups that are advocating for kind of decentralizing those markets. That is an action. You need to, you know, vote for legislators that actually care about where your food comes from. For example, the country of origin labeling, that was enacted in 2014. And so for a few years, producers actually had a pretty decent profitability on their calves. Consumers had labels now. The beef actually came from, and they had a choice, you know, oh, it's beef from Argentina, it's beef from Brazil, or it's a mixture. They knew where it came from. But then the World Trade Organization received complaints from Canada and Mexico, our two trading partners who import a lot of beef into our country. And so they threatened, you know, $1 billion in retaliatory tariffs against the U.S. So Congress goes, and panics. And instead of saying, hey, our people of the United States of America have a right to know where their food comes from, they went, oh, okay. And they repealed country of origin labeling. So beef and pork, you don't know where it comes from unless if you buy from, you know, a small grocer that supplies locally or you buy directly. You know, you don't know. So that was harmful. But I think it is important to know where your food comes from, not only for your health, but also for, you know, a sense of community, a sense of camaraderie with your fellow Americans. You know, I love things from other countries as well. I'm not a nationalist that it's only, you know, the U.S. I mean, I desire to see more countries than I've seen. I've only been to a few other countries. I have every desire to see their culture and experience, you know, what they do and all of that. So I'm not saying trade by any means is bad. Free trade's good as long as it's fair trade. And trickle-down economics doesn't always work. So it needs to be fair trade where it's really a fair product. You know, there isn't currency manipulation from another country. So they're allowing themselves to import cheap milk or cheap beef or, you know, cheap electronics, whatever it is, that then, you know, harms us. I mean, it gives us a cheap product. So we think, hey, this is good. But it actually does harm a family somewhere. And when those families go out, you know, those communities suffer because of, you know, it's just that is trickle down then. It really does trickle down. But I think it's really important to know where your food comes from, because why wouldn't you want to know? You know, why wouldn't you want to know what you're eating? The most important part of your life is really that you sustain itself. So if you want to sustain yourself, your health and your well-being, it's important what we put in and what we do with our bodies, you know, for our mind as well as our physical well-being. So,
yeah, talk about sustainability. Yeah, talk about just sustaining yourself. I love that. Let's bring it back to just
kind of simple.
Yeah, where sustainability starts.
But and I really think though the future possibly of agriculture is, you know, if you don't like the stream you're in and how it's going, maybe it's time to get out and find a different stream. And I don't mean exit agriculture and just give it up, which some people do, because it is frustrating. It's really hard, you know, or they see their profit margins becoming very slim, you know, no matter how hard they work at trying to run a debt-free operation and, you know, conserve. And, you know, ranchers were really we're the original recyclers, because first of all, you don't throw bottles in the trash, because we burn trash, you know, so right. Bottles always get recycled. You don't dump your water, you know, down the sink. You water the plant, you know, we recycle everything. You reuse because it makes sense. It's resourceful. And that's what we do. We are resourceful people. So I think for the future of ranching and farming, there has to be a willingness to embrace ideas where technology can help. And that's a little bit hard because a lot of our generation is older in this. So it's sometimes just hard to understand. But there is technology that's been very helpful, just like when a pickup, you know, came along versus a horse-drawn buggy, you know, the vehicle. That was helpful. Drones can be helpful to us. We're waiting for drones to be able to go further distances for us to be able to check water for our cattle up on some of the mesas. It will save us time and the wear and tear on our vehicles and rangers going up these rocky roads. So we look at that and try to find things, you know, that will help us. But I think connecting consumers to producers mm-hmm. is going to be the key to really sustaining food production in the U.S. So it doesn't become monopolized by corporations. And not all corporations are bad. I'm sorry. I don't mean to just sound like they're all bad. They all want to monopolize.
No, you're not.
But, I mean, there's a lot of them that do good, you know, and do care. So we're a little S corp, so we're technically a corporation. But I think it's going to take consumers and producers connecting. So it may take us getting out of that river that we've been in, that we know and we're familiar with, and figuring out a way and then consumers coming in and, you know, maybe helping figure out a way to, you know, do that direct sales and be able to, you know, facilitate that in grocers, small grocers coming back, you know, that actually care about their communities because they live in that community, you know, or the existing grocers actually taking a stake in their community, you know, and not just going for the cheapest, you know, price, actually saying, hey, we want to support the people in this community. We want to feed the people in this community good products. We don't want to, you know, we've got corn growers just down the road. We want to get our corn, source our corn from right next door, because that technically should be cheaper. The transportation is shorter.
You're cutting out some
kind of global food. Yes, but the global food system, the way it is, you know, with different things, sometimes it truly is cheaper to import food from across the globe. Doesn't make sense.
No, it just sounds really funny. And I don't know, I think your future sounds great to me. So hopefully that's the future that we're going for. So, I mean, really, you know, more local, like helping that, you know, that farmer that's close to you, or even hopefully, like you said, with technology changing, hopefully there are things we can do, or what, you know, Biteable Foods is working on that can help trace that food. And I think it'll help that family farmer. Like, yeah, look what, like what you said. No, we do not do that. Look at what we do with our beef. Yeah. And then, you know, this is how we want to present it to you, because it does change the taste and things like that. And so, like, so that's the future that, you know, I'm looking towards too. There are changes happening. It's, you know, starting. Yeah. And this is the future that I think it's something we hopefully can see, because that's the route I think people are asking the important questions. Is there anything else you really want to leave like the listeners with? Because you brought up really good points about just, I guess, cattle ranching in general. Just I think you covered a lot of misconceptions. And if you want to repeat something that you said, the most important thing maybe you want to leave listeners with.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I think I would actually say two things. One, you do have to play an active role in politics and how you vote. It's not this party or that party that is always in line with caring about food and consumer issues and food safety. We didn't cover food safety, but we have a big problem with that in the U.S. So, you know, those regulations that are in place that actually are not being enforced, the anti-competitive practices that aren't being enforced, it's important to have legislators that won't be easily just bought out by a corporation, that they actually care about you, their constituents. So look across party lines on that. There are people on both sides that have been advocates for that. And so that's an important thing to do. You do need to pay attention to, you know, the people running for office, or maybe you need to run for office, you know, and take a stance for your community, your region, your state, whatever that is. So on that side, I would encourage people to do that, because that's what impacts us. They're the ones who make the laws, you know, and the laws impact us. And if they're not enforced, you know, the agencies that are overseeing them, the government agencies, you know, they need to be held accountable. So, but on the idea of ranching, I think what I would like to leave consumers with is, I would just like to paint a picture of what it is to be a rancher. And I may get emotional here, but when you see a newborn calf, you see, you don't look at it and go, oh, this is so many dollars. You don't. You see life as it's meant to be, you know? And then when you see it grow, when you've taken care of it, and those calves look good and they weigh well and they handle well, handling is how we do things a horseback. Some people do motorcycles and four-wheelers. Some people do helicopters, but we ride them, you know, ride horses and do it. And some people do it all on foot. But anyways, when you see that, you have so much pride in what you've produced, you know, what you have prepared. And so I think it's the same as a kindergarten teacher like you being proud of the success of a student, you know, that later graduates and does well in life. I still send Christmas cards to my kindergarten teacher. She was wonderful. So it is, while this is food production that we're talking about, there is pride in what we do, you know, and when we go out and we look at our land and we see that the grass comes back every year, and it comes back healthy and full. And the water, you know, because we've improved our water systems, that benefits the cattle and the livestock. And when you get to live where you see, you know, nature at its finest, I mean, it's a wonderful thing. And I know a lot of ranchers, we're busy, but it is something we can share. We feel we believe that we are stewards of this land. We believe God's given us, you know, this little piece of earth. And so we believe that it's our job to steward it and care for what we've been given. So, but it's also our job to share, you know, with what we have. So we enjoy having people come out and learn about what we do. My dad will meet someone on the airplane. In fact, they're back in DC right now visiting someone he met on the airplane that he told about ranching because he was on his way back from the ranch. And, you know, so they're having dinner with their family in a few days and, you know, going to connect with people they never would have connected with. And hopefully those people come and visit the ranch. They live in Washington, DC. You know, so that's, I think of it as we are human beings and we do care for our animals, we care for our families, and we care for the product that we produce. But I think if the world could have more mutual respect just for people, you know, and care for people mm-hmm. and what they do and their livelihood, and not just be so focused on what we want and what we need, and it's kind of all about me, I think the world could be a lot better. And there's a lot of infighting, even in agriculture, even on the ranching right. side. But if people could truly stop and go, each one of us is a human being that loves what we do. Hopefully we love what we do. If we don't, right. switch it, you know, yeah. do something else, find what you love. But I think if we could do that, we would value other people and we would value what they do and appreciate it in a whole new level. So I guess that would be my two long things.
Well, no, they're both important aspects, and I'm glad you brought up the food safety. And really, like we talked about with how you treat the animals, it's everyone needs to hear that. It is so important because what you hear on the news, and we'd all be so lucky to be able to talk about our job the way you do, because you really don't say job. Like, this is just what you do.
Yours.
It's not I know it's a job, but you know, it's the way you talk about it. You can just see how passionate you are about and how important it is to you and how you treat your cattle and the lessons you're instilling in your children. And I could go on and on and on.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I've learned a lot tonight, and I feel like I might be even a little better of a person too. And I can go on and talk to people and be like, listen to this podcast when it comes out. You're going to learn a ton like I did. And it's that information seeking, and you feel powerful. Like the, you know, options are endless of what can happen with our world and just having a more positive outlook on everything. Yes. The negative after you turn off the news at night, yes. with what you love, which I can't always watch at night because I need a more positive.
Me too. I'm with you.
So, is there a way the listeners can find you, or maybe if they have a question about anything that was said tonight?
Yeah. You know what? I would be happy to, this kind of sounds silly. We don't have a website for our ranch yet. But I'm on Instagram.
Yeah. That's not silly at all.
And so you can find me on Instagram. I do have a public profile. And so you get snippets of our life. And if they would like to, you know, they can message me and, you know, we can then connect, and I would exchange, you know, email if I, you know, felt led that, hey, or a phone number, and we could, you know, connect. But I know that sounds silly, but I am on Instagram, and you get a picture of our life, our day-to-day life. It's not all wonderful all the time. You know, I fail as a mom, and, you know, we get mad at the cattle every once in a while. I mean, you do the whole nine yards, you know. But you do get a picture of what our life is and who I am as a person. And so if they have any questions or, you know, want to know more, or maybe they actually want to come out to Southeastern Colorado and visit us, I love meeting people from different places. So that would be, you know, that would be wonderful. So if they want to find me on Instagram, that might be the easiest way.
Right. And Colorado's not a bad place to visit either. So no. A little vacation spot. No, it's totally not silly. Instagram, I think it's a great way to show snippets of what happens. And of course, nothing's all wonderful. We all know that. I think every mom feels like she fails as a mom. You wouldn't be a good mom if you didn't think you failed. If you thought you were perfect, you're failing at something. You just don't realize it. No.
Yes. I was going to say, this sounds silly, but I have to go, what is my Instagram? So it's Elizabeth, ELISABETH. Jer_JER2911. That's actually a Bible verse, Jeremiah 29:11. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a future and a hope." So that's where my little backside came, but that is, that's my hope for living.
That's actually a perfect way to sum up this podcast. It really is how you were talking about things and being stewards of the land and everything. I love it. That's just the perfect little piece.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on again. I'm going to check you out on Instagram. And hopefully many of the listeners do as well. And I appreciate you taking your time tonight. I learned a lot, and that's the whole point of this podcast. And I know the listeners out there will learn just as much as I did. So thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. And thank you for what you do and what ByTable is doing right now. I'm excited about that. So thank you for what you're doing to help consumers and producers.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks for that. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye. We'd like to remind our audience that the views of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of ByTable or of our staff personally. The purpose of the ByTable podcast is to encourage spirited dialogue around topics like food, nutrition, animal and human welfare, and the food system. Part of having an open and spirited dialogue is accepting that others have views that are different than ours and working to understand how their experiences have differed from our own. We encourage all listeners to do their own research on any and all topics discussed during the show. That being said, we hope you enjoyed the podcast, and thanks for listening.